Okay, so this is a recording of the second half of our introduction to Shemitah, the kickoff of this year's learning about Shemitah. I'm just recording this myself, since it didn't fit into the hour, shockingly, and since we have other topics to cover, so we're not going to continue this next Friday. So I'm just recording the rest now, and then we'll move on from there. So in the first part of it, we introduced first the value of Shemitah and looked at various approaches to why Shemitah is so important and why it has such a central role in the view of Torah and as it's presented in the Torah, in the view of halacha, of Jewish law, as well as Jewish thought. We then shifted to talk about practical questions. So the first issue was, when is Shemitah? What conditions actually create a biblical obligation to observe Shemitah, as well as how you calculate the date for Shemitah? Not as straightforward as one might have expected. And then second, we talked about working the land and the different aspects of that. What are the mitzvos involved in not working the land during Shemitah? Which land in Israel is subject to the laws of Shemitah? What are the boundaries of this land? What about land owned by a non-Jew? And then we talked about, within that framework, what exactly is the prohibited work that we're talking about? And finally, brief note that it's not just during Shviyas, during the seventh year, but actually the prohibition begins even before that, and so that's its own topic. We then shifted to talk about abandoning the produce that grows on its own during Shemitah. That is a separate mitzvah. We talked about actively declaring it after, declaring it ownerless, which is what the Rambam demands. We talked about not fencing it in, as well as the possibility that maybe you're not supposed to guard it in any way, not just not fencing it in. And even the idea in the Midrash that you're supposed to break down the fences that are there, which, again, the Midrash stops short of requiring, but as on all of these topics, there's much more to say, which I hope to do in the course of the year. I also included within that the discussion about Sfichin, where there is a rabbinic prohibition against... one second, this is... a little too slow. That may help. Sorry. We said there's a rabbinic prohibition against the use of produce that grows wildly during Shemitah if it grows in a field that is normally cultivated on a Jew's property. And we noted that this may even apply not just to food, but even to flowers. That was subject to debate. The reason for this is simply to prevent a person from planting stuff and then saying, it just grew wildly. Okay, so our last two areas that we need to cover in this bird's eye view of Shemitah are altered harvesting, I'll explain what that means in a moment, and Kedusha Shviyas, the sanctity of the Shemitah produce. So altered harvesting, or as I put it on the source sheet, Ketzira Mishuna. So the Torah says that Sarcha lo sizra v'chamacha lo sizmor, I'm sorry, Espiach Ketzircha lo siktzor. You're not supposed to... you're not supposed to harvest that which grows during Shemitah. So on that basis, I would have assumed the answer is simply no harvesting. That's it. Simple rule, beginning, middle, and end. And indeed, if you look on your sheet, it starts on the test. We have two mitzvos lo sa'aseh, two prohibitions. Number one, ketziras gidulin, not to harvest things that grow wildly. And number two, ketziras peros ha'ilan, not to harvest tree fruit. And so it would seem like, well, don't harvest at all. Side note on this, but a fascinating note on it. Why is it that I'm not supposed to harvest? What exactly does this fit into in terms of, the laws of Shemitah? I might look at it and say, it's part of not working the land. Not working the land, not working the plants includes not harvesting them. However, the other way to look at it is to say, no, it's not about the land, it's about the produce itself. We say that the produce is sanctified, that's what we call Kedushas Shviyas, which we're going to get to, God willing, next, and that the reason why I'm not supposed to harvest it is because the produce is, in and of itself, holy, the produce is sacred. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach argues that, in fact, the prohibition against harvesting is not about the land, the first approach, but rather it's the second approach. It's about the issue of Kedushas Shviyas, the sanctity of the produce. And he brings a lot of evidence. It's in Ma'adanei Eretz, Siman Beis. But briefly, he notes that you're not allowed to engage in work on the produce of the sixth year to improve it during Shemitah. In other words, if there's stuff that's there from year 6 that's still in the ground when Shemitah starts, I'm not allowed to work on it. However, the Yerushalmi in the 6th chapter in Shviyas is going to say, I'm allowed to harvest it during Shemitah. why am I allowed to harvest it? If harvesting is about not working the land, who cares whether it's produce from year 6 or produce from year 7? So he says, this demonstrates that the issue is not about the working the land. The issue is kedusha, it's the sanctity of the produce. Year 6 produce does not have sanctity, therefore I'm allowed to harvest it. Ditto. The rule is that 7th year produce that enters the 8th year, I'm not supposed to harvest that during Shemitah, and I'm not even allowed to harvest it after that, in year 8. Why? Because it has sanctity, argues Shlomo Zalman. So there's more to discuss about this. Practical ramifications, though, of saying that it's about sanctity of the produce, instead of saying it's about a prohibition against working the land, would be, what about harvesting in and on Jews' land? For example, that produce that grows there does not have Kedusha Shvi'is, does not have the sanctity of the Shemitah year, and therefore, according to Shlomo Zalman, I would be allowed to harvest it. A remarkable point. So, something to discuss. But in any case, we say, don't harvest the land. So when I say don't harvest the land, it doesn't sound like altered harvesting is fine. It sounds like no harvesting is fine. However, that can't be true. Because when we read the Psukim from Parshas Behar, we said, Lochem yelo ochla, you get to eat the produce. So unless you're planning on bending over the plant and chewing, which, you know, you can do with certain types of produce, but not wheat, how are you planning on eating the produce? You have to be able to cut it and bring it inside. So there are two resolutions that are brought in the Medrash and the Sifra, which I brought you here in source Mem on your sheet. And the answer that's given based on this Sifra is twofold. Number one, the prohibition is against harvesting from that which has been guarded. Min hashamur is the term that's used in the Sifra. That's number one. Number two, at the end of the Medrash, it brings as well that you are not allowed to harvest in the normal way, but you're allowed to harvest kederach habotzrim. I'm sorry, not the normal way, the derech habotzrim, but instead you're allowed to harvest in an unusual way. No harvesting normally. So I'm allowed to harvest. I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to harvest. Let me make sure I'm saying this clearly. That's what happens when you rush. Number one is, don't harvest from the produce that's been guarded, that's been kept away from people. And number two, you're not allowed to harvest in the normal manner of harvesting. Those are the two prohibitions. I'm allowed to harvest, though, if I'm taking from produce that's been left available for everyone. Assuming that, I harvest in an unusual way, with a shinui, in an unusual way. What constitutes an unusual way? So we're going to have to talk about that. But it may include using different tools, not the normal tools that are used in harvesting. It may include changing the amount you harvest, not harvesting as much as one might normally harvest in the process. It may be about not the amount, but the percentage of the field. Not harvesting the entire field, we'll have to talk about that, obviously. And it may include harvesting it into a space that's not the normal place where you process harvested produce. All four of those are going to be part of our conversation. Now, when we talk about not harvesting the produce, does that mean all produce? So there are those who limit which produce this applies to, but the Rambam says no, it means all produce. You're not allowed to harvest all produce, again, with the exception that we've already noted in that Sifra. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Madani Eretz Zayin Beis, and I brought it in Source Mem Beis, makes a fascinating point about this business of not harvesting it. Take a look, it's worth seeing in Source Mem Beis. He says, Nira de Hefkera de Shvi'is. He says, this idea of abandoning the produce in Shemitah, which is manifest in not harvesting it, although we've already said it's a separate mitzvah, but the statement that we're supposed to make it ownerless and not take it, he says, Aval gashu av lechomine hefker, afilu hachi choluk hu b'miktas mishar hefker. He says, even though, in some sense, this is a basis for the laws of hefker, in the sense it's the Torah talking about ownerlessness of produce, nonetheless, it is, he argues, different from other kinds of ownerlessness. What do you mean? Normally, he says, the way hefker works is, dechashav kilu eino shayach klal l'shum adam. You declare something ownerless, it means, I don't own it, nobody owns it, it's available, whoever wants it, takes it. That's it. That's the normal way that hefker works. But he says, it's not true here. Mashen kin b'shvi'is, sha'amra Torah ba'achlu avyonei amecha. In Shemitah, the Torah says, the poor of your land, the needy people in your land, shall eat. So it's not apparently just, you know, for everybody. The needy people shall eat it. And then further, it says, "V'gamar Rabbi Sasha Basharik Lachem Leochlo Lechol Avdechav Lamasechav Leschirchol Leshoshavcha Gremimach." It enumerates: you get to eat it, and your servants get to eat it, and your laborers who live among you get to eat it. So he says, "Esher dechashiv kiilu kulam shutfim ba." It's possible that this ownerlessness isn't actually ownerlessness, but it's pan ownership. It is owned by everybody. The Kaman Shekane ain shum adam Rasha Lizgos Bahem Kim Lafit Sarcha, which is why, to take it back to harvesting, you're only allowed to harvest amounts based on your need, and that's part of the unusual harvesting that we're gonna have to talk about. But there's a limit on what I'm allowed to take, because it's not that nobody owns it. If nobody owns it, I can take as much as I can carry. However, everybody owns it, so I'm not supposed to infringe on the rights of others of access to the produce. And he points out something fascinating. He says, we said it in the first part of this year, that you're allowed to work on the trees, right, in certain ways. Or we said you're allowed to water. I think that was our particular discussion. You're allowed to water. Why mishup seda? To prevent loss. So Shlomo Zalman says, I don't understand. If everything is ownerless, you don't own it. You didn't suffer a loss. If it deteriorates, it deteriorates. You didn't lose a thing. Ella, he says, the answer is, it is a loss. Because it's not that no one owns it. It's that everyone owns it. And therefore, if it deteriorates, everybody loses. And that comes up in our discussion about doing work to maintain fruit during Shemitah. Not just to maintain the tree, but to maintain the fruit as well. So, an interesting point, and it affects the harvesting conversation to say, don't encroach on the share of others. Now, once we've said you can only harvest in an unusual way, and that normally harvesting is not allowed, that brings us to discuss something called Otsar Beis Din, or Otsar Beit Din. I've been going with Ashkenazi pronunciation, I hope it's not offensive. The Otsar Beis Din harvesting is essentially a process in which the local Beis Din, hires people to harvest wild produce. They hire people and say, we would like you to harvest that which grows wild. Not the svichin that we talked about, which you're not supposed to take, but rather produce that grew in year 6 that has not yet been picked, and tree fruit. That's what we're talking about specifically, not the svichin. But to harvest those permitted items and to sell it at a rate that will enable the Beit Din to pay their workers. That's the idea. So what you're doing is not taking a profit. What you're doing is finding a way to bring to market produce such that the workers will be able to be reimbursed. They're getting paid for their work. Now, there's a lot that has to go into this, such as the discussion of which fees can be passed along to the consumer. If you hire the farmer to be the one to do this harvesting, and the farmer does stuff in the field, is he allowed to charge people for what he did in the field prior to harvesting it? Well, all of this begins with a Tosefta. It's in Source Mem Gimel, which says, Barishona, at first, Hayushluche based in Yoshim al Pischa Yayaros, what would happen initially was that the court would appoint agents, and the agents would sit at the entrances of the towns, and then the Tosefta says, Kol mi shemevi peros besoch yodo, notlin osan mimenu, venosin lo mehen, what would happen is people would bring produce to these agents. They would take it from the person. They would give the person 3 meals worth of food, and the rest they'd put in a storage thing for the community. And then da 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 da, and they would distribute it on Fridays. That's the initial format which the Tosefta describes, with the Beit Din filtering, storing, and distributing Shemitah produce. That evolves into this business of them actually marketing it to cover the costs. And that's done. But obviously, this isn't a solution for all Shemitah produce needs, right? Because it's only the stuff that grew in the ground from year 6 and the tree fruit. Good luck with everything else that you need. So this is not a solution for all of our problems. Also, it's not quite so simple because it lends itself to abuse. The Star K, I didn't put the link on here, but the Star K in Tavshinai in Hay, in the last Shemitah year, put out a bulletin in which they noted that they were unhappy about leniencies that had occurred in Tavshin Samaches, the previous Shemitah year. They didn't specify what their leniencies were they were upset about, but when we learn about Otsar Beis Din, we'll see there are quite a few options. So, no normal harvesting. Yes, unusual harvesting. The produce is the property of everybody. The Otzer Beis Din is not a way of getting around that problem, but rather what you're doing is harvesting it in order to distribute it to everybody. And because it's done by the Beis Din, because it's done by the court, it's okay. And it doesn't apply to stuff that grows in the ground in year 7. Again, more to be said about the rationale and implementation of Otzer Beis Din. But I wanted to move to talk about what happens at the end of the season with what's called Bi'ur. As the Rambam notes, I brought it for you in source Mem Dalet, Peros Shviyas Ein Ochlin Mehen Ela Kol Zman She'oso Hamin Matsui Basadeh. You could only eat from Shemitah produce as long as produce of that kind is found in the field. As the Torah says, it's supposed to be for the animals in your land to eat, so only as long as the animals are eating it are you able to have it. Once the animals are no longer able to eat it because it's gone, at that point, Chayav Levar Oso Hamin Min Habayis, he says you have to get rid of it from your home. V'zeo Bi'ur Shel Peros Shviyas, that's called Bi'ur, the process of eliminating the produce. But what exactly does that mean? Well, the Rambam has already given you an indication of what he means, but it's more explicit in source Mem Hei, where the Rambam writes, Hayulo Peros Merubin, if a person has a lot of produce at the end of the season, what does he do? He should give, when the time, right before the time of Bi'ur comes, he should give out 3 meals worth of food to everybody. But it's all off limits after that. Once the time for Bi'ur comes, it's off limits, whether for the indigent, whether for the wealthy. And if he can't find anybody to eat it at the time of the Bi'ur, Sorif ba'esh, burn it. Umashlech liyamamelach, throw it into the Dead Sea. Uma'abdom l'chol davar shema'abed, find some way to destroy the produce. It is off limits. Bi'ur like Bi'ur chametz. They completely and totally get rid of it. That's what the Rambam writes. And the Ravid is beside himself. And the Ramban says absolutely not. But really, the Yerushalmi seems to say not. The Yerushalmi, which I brought you in source Mem Vav, tells you, Rabbi Yitzchak bar Radifa Havalei Uvda, Asa Shol Rabbi Yirmiyah Armalei Mar Yavasa Kamach. I'm just jumping to the part that's directly relevant because I'm a little low on time. He said, find 3 friends, declare it hafker in front of those three friends. The idea of doing it in front of those 3 friends is that they're actually not going to take it. You'll get to take it back. That's its own discussion. What you do with this produce, make a hafker and then take it back, is that even legitimate? But the point is that the Yerushalmi believes, and the Ravid and the Ramban, that Bi'ur just means render it ownerless. This is an extremely important practical point. Because it comes up with produce that we end up with from Otzer Beis Din. You see, when this process that we talked about in which the Beis Din gets the produce, this holy, sacred produce, when it's in their hands, as Ramban writes in Source Mem Zayin, there's no law of Bi'ur. Beis Din has no obligation whatsoever to do Bi'ur. Which means, if you buy Otzer Beis Din produce, and then the time for Bi'ur applies, you have to carry out Bi'ur. And this comes up. Because every Shemitah cycle you find there are wineries which sell wine that is Otzer Beis Din. That wine has the status of Shemitah produce. It is holy. And it has to be treated like Shemitah produce, which means you have to do Bi'ur. How do you do Bi'ur on that wine? We have to talk about that in Shir. We have a lot to talk about on Bi'ur. We have to talk about whether Bi'ur applies to produce that grows on the land of a non-Jew. We have to figure out how you figure out what the end of the season looks like. Produce grows in different places at varying times. This all has to be dealt with. What do you do with mixtures of foods? And some of them are gone from the field at one time, some of them at another time. So all of this is going to be complicated, but this is also material we need to cover in Shemitah. There's one more issue within harvesting, which is harvesting after Shemitah, material that grew during Shemitah. I already alluded to it earlier, but we're going to have to talk about that as well. So all of this is within the heading of unusual or alternative harvesting. And that brings us to the last topic, which is Kedushas Shviyas, the sanctity of Shemitah produce. So let's talk about how this works. We have already noted from Shlomo Zalman Orbach that the prohibition against harvesting is associated with the fact that the produce is holy. But what exactly does it mean when you say this produce is holy? Which produce is holy? What are the rules that are involved? So so first of all, there's a whole discussion about at what point produce qualifies as Shemitah produce. When does it have to reach a particular stage of growth in order to be called Shemitah produce? And of course, the big headache within all that is the Esrog, which has this extended period of time that it is on the tree, and therefore the question of when exactly is it a Shemitah Esrog is a fascinating discussion. Nonetheless, once you figure out whether it in fact belongs to the Shemitah year, the rules of sanctity of Shemitah certainly apply to food. The basic principle is provided in the Gemara in Sukkah, which I brought you in source Mem Ches, but I'm not going to read aloud. It's Hana'aso ubi'uro shave. The sanctity of Shemitah applies to produce which is enjoyed even as it is destroyed. Right? Like food. Right? You enjoy the food as you consume it. So only produce that is used in a way that destroys the produce is actually subject to sanctity of Shemitah. And then a second criterion, it has to be shaveh l'chol nefesh. It has to be something that is commonly enjoyed, not something that's kind of a niche pleasure, so to speak. So that leads to the question, what about besamim, spices, right? You don't eat them. You're not eating them. They grew though, and they do benefit the body. So what if, let's say, you burn them in order to create the smell that you are going to enjoy? The Yerushalmi asks this question about dyes and inedible besamim. I think I brought it on the sheet. Yes, I did, in source Mem Tes from the 7th chapter in the Yerushalmi. Also, not everybody likes spices. Not everybody likes the way that, not spices, likes, when I use the word spices, we think food. I don't mean food. I mean things that have a nice aroma, aromatics, if you will. That's really what I'm talking about. Besamim, in other words. So they're not necessarily enjoyed by everybody. Some people really like besamim. Some people don't like them at all. So will this have kedushas shvius? Is one question we have to explore. And then another one is flowers. What about flowers, which you don't destroy in the process of enjoying them? Well, what about an edible flower? So we have all sorts of things that we need to talk about. With this, I brought you a chazanish, but again, no time to go through it. But this is a question. We have to talk about what kind of produce is actually subject to the sanctity. And then we have to talk about, once we know the age of the produce, so to speak, how did it qualify for the Shemitah year? And we know whether it's a kind of produce that is subject to Shemitah, to sanctity. We get into the last point, which is, so what are the rules? What are the rules that stem from this sanctity? So, example, don't destroy it. Okay? We're not allowed to destroy holy produce. Now, we have to clarify, what exactly constitutes destruction? What are destructive activities? How do you deal with leftovers? Right? If you're eating and you're full, but there's stuff left on your plate, what are you supposed to do with the leftovers if you're not allowed to destroy it? What if you cook it in a way that most people don't cook it? Does that constitute destruction? What about if you give it to somebody to eat, but that person isn't Jewish, and therefore they don't have a mitzvah of Shemitah? So when they eat it, they're not somebody who's engaged in the ritual act of eating Shemitah produce. Does that constitute destruction? The Rambam seems to think so in source Na'alef. What about giving Shemitah produce to somebody who will abuse it? Right, that brings in an entirely different discussion, which really isn't a Shemitah discussion at all. It has relevance to every area of halachic life, which is interfacing with somebody who is not going to observe the laws that you observe. So if I give Shemitah produce to somebody who is going to misuse it, am I responsible? It also comes up in terms of selling somebody farming equipment, which they might use to farm during Shemitah. What is the extent of my responsibility in this regard? And that raises issues of Darkei Shalom, of peace between people. Do you want to create strife? We never want to create strife, but what do you do? Also, commerce. Am I allowed to market Shemitah produce? So the Mishnah in Shvius in Stores Nun Beis is very clear. Ein osin schar v'per Shvius. You're not allowed to market Shemitah produce. They talk about instead, I'm not going to say the instead. You can read it for yourself, but there's no time to go into insteads. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah also says it, though. The Shemitah produce is le'ochla, to eat, below l'schara. It's not meant for you to market it. And we try to avoid marketing Shemitah produce in what's called derech schara, a way of marketing. However, anybody who's ever bought Lola Ben Esrog set after Shemitah knows, there are ways to acquire the Shemitah product and give somebody money and get around this problem. So we have to talk about how that exactly is done. And no, Otzer Beis Din is not running afoul of this rule, because you're not marketing the produce, you're just paying for the work that was done in bringing it to market. So you get around the problem that way. What about exporting it? Are you allowed to take it out of the land of Israel? The Mishnah in Shviyas says in Source Nun Gimel, you don't take Peros Shviyas Meha'aretz L'chutz L'aretz. We don't take Shemitah produce outside of Israel, and in fact, the Rambam writes, if it has left Israel, if you look at Source Nun Daled, Mizbarim b'mekomon v'lo yavir m'makom l'makom, you do be wherever it is, and you do not transport it from point A to point B. How do you like that? Last point within dealing with the sanctity of the produce is Kedushas Damim, the sanctity of its money, meaning the money that somebody exchanges for Shemitah produce, if one does buy Shemitah produce, gains the sanctity of Shemitah, not just money, but items that are bartered for Shemitah produce. Now, what happens if I sell the Shemitah produce, or I barter the Shemitah produce for something, and then that item is then exchanged for something else? Where does the holiness go? How far down the line does it go? Does everything in the chain become holy? Is it only the first item and the last item in the chain that become holy? We'll have to talk about that. Not to mention, of course, checks, credit cards, Bitcoin. How does this sanctity pertain in the era of digital currency? Also, Also, along with this, we also have to note that this raises, again, the question of interfacing with those who are not observing Shemitah. So, what happens if I buy Shemitah produce from somebody, knowing that he is not going to treat the money as sanctified? So, is that a problem as well? Do I worry, as I brought you two Rashis here in Nunhei and Nunvav, am I worried he's going to keep the money after beer? He's not going to eliminate the money or make it hefker, whatever he has to do for beer. Do I have to worry he's going to spend it on items that are not food, which is inappropriate? Because, after all, again, it's Shemitah money. It's supposed to be used for eating, just like the produce is la'ochla, for eating. So that's a concern as well. So what we've accomplished, I hope, in the hour, in the first shiur, plus this additional 27 minutes, is to get some sense, again, of the field of play. What are the issues that we're talking about? If you take a look back at the outline that I gave you in the beginning of the source sheet, we want to know, when is Shemitah? We want to understand what it means to not work the land. What land do we mean? And does it matter who owns that land? And what constitutes work? And when is that work prohibited? We have a mitzvah of abandoning the produce that grows, declaring it hefker, but we need to understand what abandonment actually means, what constitutes abandonment, as well as what about stuff that grows wildly, this rabbinic decree of Sfichin. We also want to get into the discussion about harvesting in an unusual way, so that you'll be able to eat the Shemitah produce without violation of the prohibition against harvesting. So what exactly is allowed? Which produce is subject to this rule of not harvesting it? What about the Otzer Beis Din method of harvesting, the duty to eliminate the produce beer at the end of the season, and what about stuff that grows into year 8? And then finally, the sanctity of Shemitah produce, which kinds of produce are sanctified, what rules govern our relationship with that sanctity? What does that mean in terms of how I eat it, how I cook it, what I do with leftovers? May I market it? May I export it? And then finally, the holiness of the money that is exchanged for Shemitah produce. I hope that this will be somewhat helpful in the course of the year. Thank you very much.